August 25th, 1983. I saw by the clock at the little station that it was past 11. I began walking through the night toward the hotel. I experienced, as I had at other times in the past, the resignation and relief we are made to feel by those places most familiar to us. The wide gate was open, the large country house itself in darkness. I went into the vestibule, whose pale mirrors echoed back the plants of the salon. Strangely, the owner did not recognize me. He turned the guest register around for me to sign. I picked up the pen chained to the register stand, dipped it in the brass inkwell, and then as I leaned over the open book, there occurred the first of the many surprises the night would have in store for me. My name, Jorge Luis Borges, had already been written there, and the ink was not yet dry. "I thought you'd already gone upstairs," the owner said to me. Then he looked at me more closely and corrected himself. "Oh, I beg your pardon, sir. You look so much like the other gentleman, but you are younger." "What room is he in?" I asked. "He asked for room 19, came the reply. It was as I had feared. I dropped the pen and hurried up the stairs. Room 19 was on the third floor. It opened onto a sad, run-down sort of terrace with a park bench and, as I recall, a railing running around it. It was the hotel's highest room. I tried the door. It opened at my touch. The overhead light still burned. In the pitiless light, I came face to face with myself. There, in the narrow iron bed, older, withered, and very pale, lay I, on my back, my eyes turned up vacantly toward the high plaster moldings of the ceiling. Then I heard the voice. It was not exactly my own, it was the one I often hear in my recordings, unpleasant and without modulation. "How odd," it was saying. "We are two, yet we are one. But then nothing is odd in dreams." "Then," I asked fearfully, "all this is a dream?"
"It is, I am sure, my last dream."
He gestured toward the empty bottle on the marble nightstand.
"You, however, shall have much to dream before you come to this night. What date is it for you?"
"I'm not sure," I said, rattled. "But yesterday was my 61st birthday."
"When in your waking state you reach this night again, yesterday will have been your 84th. Today is August 25th, 1983.
"So long to wait," I murmured.
"Not for me," he said shortly. "For me, there's almost no time left. At any moment I may die. At any moment I may fade into that which is unknown to me, and still I dream these dreams of my double. That tiresome subject I got from Stevenson and mirrors."
I sensed that the evocation of Stevenson's name was a farewell, not some empty stroke of pedantry. I was he, and I understood. It takes more than life's most dramatic moments to make a Shakespeare, hitting upon memorable phrases. To distract him, I said, "I knew this was going to happen to you, right here in this hotel, years ago. In one of the rooms below, we began the draft of the story of this suicide."
"Yes,"
he replied slowly, as though piecing together the memories.
"But I don't see the connection. In that draft, I bought a one-way ticket for Adrogué. And when I got to the Hotel Las Delicias, I went up to room 19, the room farthest from all the rest. It was there that I committed suicide."
"That's why I'm here," I said.
"Here? We've always been here. It's here in this house on Calle Maipú that I am dreaming you. It is here in this room that belonged to Mother that I am taking my departure."
"That belonged to Mother," I repeated, not wanting to understand. "I am dreaming you in room 19, on the top floor next to the rooftop terrace."
"Who is dreaming whom?" "I know I am dreaming you. I do not know whether you are dreaming me. That hotel in Adrogué was torn down years and years ago, 20, maybe 30, who knows?"
"I am the dreamer," I replied with a touch of defiance.
Don't you realize that the first thing to find out is whether there is only one man dreaming or two men dreaming each other? I am Borges. I saw your name in the register and I came upstairs. But I am Borges, and I am dying in a house on Calle Maipú.
There was a silence, and then he said to me,
Let us try a test. What was the most terrible moment of our life?
I leaned over him, and the two of us spoke at once. I know that neither of us spoke the truth. A faint smile lit up the aged face. I felt that that smile somehow reflected my own.
We've lied to each other, he said, because we feel that we are two, not one. The truth is that we are two, yet we are one.
I was beginning to be irritated by this conversation, and I told him so. Then I added, And you, in 1983, are you not going to disclose anything about the years I have left?
What can I tell you, poor Borges? The misfortunes to which you are already accustomed will repeat themselves. You will be left alone in this house. You will touch the books that have no letters and the Swedenborg medallion and the wooden tray with the Federal Cross. Blindness is not darkness. It is a form of solitude. You will return to Iceland. Iceland. Sea-girt Iceland. In Rome, you will recite once more the poetry of Keats, whose name, like all men's names, was writ in water.
I've never been in Rome.
There are other things. You will write our best poem, an elegy.
On the death of... I began. I could not bring myself to say the name.
No. She will outlive you.
We grew silent. Then he went on.
You will write the book we've dreamed of for so long. In 1979, you will see that your supposed career has been nothing but a series of drafts, miscellaneous drafts, and you will give in to the vain and superstitious temptation to write your great book, the superstition that inflicted upon us Goethe's Faust and Salammbô and Ulysses. I filled, incredible to tell, many, many pages,
and in the end you realized that you had failed.
Worse, I realized that it was a masterpiece in the most overwhelming sense of the word. My good intentions had not lasted beyond the first pages. The others held the labyrinths, the knives, the man who thinks he is an image, the reflection that thinks it is real, the tiger that stalks in the night, the battles that are in one's blood, the blind and fatal Juan Muraña, the voice of Macedonio Fernandez, the ship made with the fingernails of the dead, old English repeated in the evening.
That museum rings a bell, I remarked sarcastically.
Not to mention false recollections, the doubleness of symbols, the long catalogues, the skilled handling of prosaic reality, the imperfect symmetries that critics so jubilantly discover, the not always apocryphal quotations.
Did you publish it?
I toyed, without conviction, with the melodramatic possibility of destroying the book, perhaps in the fire. But I wound up publishing it in Madrid under a pseudonym. I was taken for a clumsy imitator of Borges, a person who had the defect of not actually being Borges, yet of mirroring all the outward appearances of the original.
I'm not surprised, I said. Every writer sooner or later becomes his own least intelligent disciple.
That book was one of the roads that led me to this night. The others... The humiliation of old age, the conviction of having already lived each day.
I will not write that book, I said.
You will, though. My words, which are now the present, will one day be but the vaguest memory of a dream.
I found myself annoyed by his dogmatic tone, the tone that I myself no doubt use in my classes. I was annoyed by the fact that we resembled each other so much, and that he was taking advantage of the impunity lent him by the nearness of death. Are you so sure, I said, to get back at him a bit, that you're going to die?
Yes, he replied. I feel a sort of sweetness and relief I've never felt before. I can't describe it. All words require a shared experience. Why do you seem so annoyed at what I'm saying? Because we're too much like each other. I loathe your face, which is a caricature of mine. I loathe your voice, which is a mockery of mine. I loathe your pathetic syntax, which is my own. So do I, he smiled, which is why I decided to kill myself. A bird sang from the garden. It's the last one, the other man said. He motioned me toward him. His hand sought mine. I stepped back. I was afraid the two hands would merge. The Stoics teach, he said to me, that we should not complain of life. The door of the prison is open. I have always understood that. I myself saw life that way, but laziness and cowardice held me back. About 12 days ago, I was giving a lecture in La Plata on Book 6 of the Aeneid. Suddenly, as I was scanning a hexameter, I discovered what my road was to be. I made this decision. And since that moment, I have felt myself invulnerable. You shall one day meet that fate. You shall receive that sudden revelation in the midst of Latin and Virgil, yet you will have utterly forgotten this curious prophetic dialogue that is taking place in two times and two places. When you next dream it, you shall be who I am, and you shall be my dream. I won't forget it. I'm going to write it down tomorrow. It will lie in the depths of your memory, beneath the tides of your dreams. When you write it, you will think that you're weaving a tale of fantasy. And it won't be tomorrow either. It will be many years from now. He stopped talking. I realized that he had died. In a way, I died with him. In grief, I leaned over his pillow, but there was no one there anymore. I fled the room. Outside, there was no patio, no marble staircase, no great silent house, no eucalyptus trees, no statues, no gazebo in a garden, no fountains, no gate in the fence surrounding the hotel in the town of Adrogué. Outside awaited other dreams.